I thought I had to say to everyone, listen, this is going to be quite long. And, you know, I was excusing it. And anyone that left was like, wow, that was so beautiful.
Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori. And this week, my guest is Laura Wood. Laura is a DJ on East Coast FM and has a morning slot with Rob, the Rob and Laura Show. The music in this podcast has been shortened for rights reason. For more information and more episodes, please visit socialfabric.ie. On the 29th of February, I will be in the Whale Theatre and my guest is Dr. Brian Penny. And on the 25th of April, I will be in the Laughter Lounge and my guests are going to be the Flynn Brothers, also known as the Happy Pair. Tickets available at whaletheatre.ie or thelaughterlounge.com. If you do enjoy the podcast, please subscribe, share and review. The title tune is Happy and Shining by The Roundabouts. Laura, how are you?
I'm okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm grand. I'm like a little dishevelled at the moment because my co-host, my left limb, is look the way I use left because my right's more important. Oh, is off on a sabbatical, and I'm doing the show by myself. Which I've been in East Coast now nearly 20 years, on and off, and I just find that the two-handed breakfast show is what I'm so used to. So the first, it's my second week now. Week one, I was like, oh God, where is he? And I've grown sort of to, you know, to enjoy it in my own way. But I will be happy for him to be back because the bouncing off each other, having a bit of crack and stuff, that's what I think the show is about, you know. So it feels like there's something, seriously something missing. So I've been a bit wrecked. But yeah, I'm grand apart from that. All good.
Brilliant, brilliant. So first of all, thanks for agreeing to come in on my show.
Not at all. Pleasure.
My one-hander show and the podcast. But I'm just curious about people, as you know, but I'm also curious about what makes people do what they do. And now you just mentioned 20 years in East Coast on and off, but we'll get to that. And doing the morning show for that length of time must be, you know, this must be something there that we can figure out a bit more about. But before all of that, I don't know anything about you. We met a couple of times outside of the studio through mutual friends. So I guess my first question is, what's your earliest memory?
Oh, my earliest memory is one that my parents say that isn't true. My family have a habit of saying to me before I even speak, oh, here she goes, because they say that the expression they use for me is take your foot off the accelerator or never let the truth get in the way of a good story, which is my motto. And I have a memory. I was born in 77. I have a memory of going to the Pope's visit in Phoenix Park in 78. Now, everyone tells me this is rubbish and I'm telling them, I even said, I remember the sandwiches, and at this stage everyone just starts laughing. So no one believes a word I said, which is a little bit problematic. I heard my 10-year-old tell a story the other day that was untrue and I went, oh God, no, don't go there. Don't do what I've done because no one believes a word you say when you grow older. But yeah, I distinctly remember my nana came over and we were in Phoenix Park for the Pope's visit and I remember the little foldy chairs we had and the sandwiches. But apparently That didn't happen. No, it did happen, but my memory, like they're like, you can't remember stuff when you're one. But I have never looked into it. Is it possible to remember stuff when you're one? Do you know?
I believe research shows that you're about between 3 and 5 is when you start to remember things. However, this is interesting that you choose your first memory to be the Pope. What do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I was brought up in a very, very religious family. My background, we used to travel on the bus in from Greystones. I grew up in Killincarrig. We used to travel on the bus into Dublin to the Latin Mass every week. when I was little. My parents were into the Tridentine Rite, and so that's what we did. So, I mean, we went to like an hour and a half long mass every week. So the Pope would have probably got a fair few mentions in our house, I would imagine, alongside a variety of other things. And then I went to a very religious school. So, I mean, I've always, you know, my life has always been sort of, there's been quite religion heavy. So maybe that was it. Maybe I felt I'd make them proud by telling them the Pope's visit was my first memory. I'm not sure. But I still say I remember it. So I'm sticking with it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. I'm fascinated by a few things you already said. The Latin Mass, an hour and a half. What's the memory of that?
Oh, there's a few memories. Teas and coffees afterwards in the hall was probably the one that I liked best. No, the Mass was lovely. I'll be honest, my father passed away last year and we had a Tridentine funeral. And anyone that came that's never had any experience of the Tridentine Rite, which was the way obviously it was post-Vatican II, they say, I thought I had to say to everyone, listen, this is going to be quite long and, you know, I was excusing it. And anyone that left was like, wow, that was so beautiful, because it's extremely solemn. You know, there's the garment. It was very solemn is the word, and respectful. But the funeral was very beautiful in many ways, and people were saying it. And I suddenly was struck by what I do miss from the Tridentine Mass. And that was exactly that. It went on. So as a child, we sort of understood because we had our missals. So you had the Latin and the English. So you knew what was going on. And my dad would be explaining it to us as well, and my mum. But apart from that, I liked the reverence of it. I liked the quiet. I mean, to this day, I'd still go into a church for quiet. They're extremely meditative places for just having silence. And that's what I liked. There wasn't much going on. Like, I went to a Church of Ireland church a while ago, and there were children like chatting, and I was like, oh God, we're all going to get into big trouble. Because like, there was none of that when I was growing up. It was all very, you know, you had communion on the tongue, you knelt for communion, and, you know, quite often women were wearing mantillas on their heads. You covered your head as a woman, you know, it was a very different experience. But there were things of it I do remember. I remember beautiful singing at Christmas. They used to have like sometimes the Haddington Row Boys Choir and stuff in, and they'd sing beautiful music. Long masses. I do remember thinking, when will the teas and coffees be? Do you know what I mean? But there was then that element of thought. And I think that's what I still like about the church. It's time to think, because I'm pretty busy. Like, loads of us are very busy and we're just creating sort of chaos a lot for ourselves, and just when you go in there, if something happens and you sort of allow yourself to go off somewhere else, which is nice.
Sorry to hear about your dad.
No, that's okay.
But what's your relationship with religion now?
I actually, funnily enough, I have quite a good relationship with religion. I understand the issues that lots of people have with the Catholic Church. I certainly wouldn't be the same level of, like my mum now, for instance, would go to a couple of masses a day. My dad was fairly religious as well up until he passed. And I go to mass. I bring the children to mass when I have them. I'm separated, but every second Sunday when I have the children, I bring them to mass. I believe in prayer, and I believe that prayer gives me quite a lot of comfort. When I was 20, I had a brain hemorrhage and it was an aneurysm. And when I was, obviously it all happened quite suddenly, but when I was in hospital just about to have, I had to have brain surgery. And as I was being wheeled into the operating theatre, the anaesthetist, I had the last rites and stuff because they didn't know. It was quite a big procedure. It was going to take about 6 hours. They had to clip the aneurysm. And the anaesthetist, I was really frightened, and I held her hand and I said, will you say a prayer for me? And she squeezed my hand and she looked at me and she said, I'll say a decade, love, right? And she looked at my eyes and I fell asleep then. And I remember being like, I'm OK. I'm grand. She's saying a decade. I'm OK. And for some weird reason, like I had a miraculous recovery from that brain hemorrhage. I was out of hospital in 2 weeks. I never got post-operative stress disorder, nothing. I mean, I get a bit worried when I get a headache since. But apart from that, I've been really lucky. Could have had strokes and everything. And I believe that it's a bit of a minor miracle. And I'll just never forget that. And I think if I was going to have drifted off from religion, I think that stopped me. Because obviously I do have an issue with some of the stuff that's gone on with the church, and I don't agree with a lot of things that go on in the church. But I think if the Catholic Church could change, could move with the people, I love the love aspect, and that God is love, and that if we loved each other, the world would be a better place. So I like the idealism behind it. I just think it's a little bit outdated, I suppose.
Oh, that's some story. And it's great to hear, because again, we always separate, you know, sometimes we get mixed up with spirituality and religion and the man-made side of it, as opposed to what you felt in that moment when that lady held your hand and then you recover, which is fantastic. But you said something earlier, it is really important that sense of community, you know, being there every week, okay, long as it may be, you had the time to spend with your family, with your friends, with them, which is kind of a bit missing now. How do your kids deal with the church? Is it, they get dragged kicking and screaming, or they're
there's an
it?
Element of that. Mm-hmm. I have a 13-year-old boy who's just gone into secondary, and he's now starting exactly what I did, which is, you can't make me do this. This is my life. My parents, my friends don't go to mass. There's a lot of this. But I remember it. I think what's really helpful I found with children recently, because I can be very, you know, like many people who are parents, I find remaining calm possibly the biggest challenge about parenthood. And what I sometimes do is just remind myself how bad I was about going to mass. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's like anything that you're trying to teach your children. Like, you know, just go back a second. And I remember my dad and my mum being exasperated with me as a young child and teenager. So I'm just like trying to stay calm and go, I know your friends don't go, but look, it's one thing. It's every second Sunday. It's 40 minutes. And we'll say some prayers for, you know, grandpa and people like that need us. And they tend to be okay with that. And to be honest with you, this is the most remarkable thing I think about mass as well. When we're there, my children are really affectionate to me in mass, and they always have been. And I don't think it's like God making them affectionate to me, but there's something about mass when we're there together. They sort of scramble to be nearer to me, and they might sit on my knee, and, you know, my 13-year-old lets me be affectionate towards him, which, you know, is changing. And the other two, and it's a lovely time. When the half an hour before mass is always one of the most stressful times of the week. And then in mass and after mass, I are really, really happy, fond memories and thoughts. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixture. Getting them there can be a problem, but when they get there, it's good, you know.
And I like that because I like the idea of the time, right? The time we give ourselves, be it, you know, meditation. Some people go to mass, some people do other things, but giving that, getting rid of the noise around, it's really, really important.
That's
fabulous.
Yeah.
There you go. That's you, because you started with the Pope. That's where we ended up here.
Well, there you go. That's true. And just to mention, the funny thing I think as well is I'd mentioned teas and coffees. My mum used to bring apple tart to mass, and there was ladies making scones. I remember the women. Mm. I remember the men. I remember the characters at mass. And you had the sisters, Newell and Vera, and they were always trying to give you like 20p and all of that. And that was all nice. But like, we all wanted for the teas and coffees after. And now we go to Kilquade Garden Centre or something. So that's the added... You go to mass and you get your bits and bobs after, you know.
Actually, before we move away from religion, I don't know the Tridentine.
Tridentine, right.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay, it's the old rite. The way mass was said before the Vatican changed. So basically up until, the 60s, I think it was, it changed. It was that mass was said in Latin. The priest has his back to the people. He says mass in Latin. And the main differences would be stuff, as I said, like you receive communion on the tongue. It's a lot more solemn And some people would say it needed to change. And yes, I would agree in many ways it did. But there are beautiful aspects of it as well, you know. But that's what happened. It just changed. It modernised to become the new rite, the new which is what we see in churches at the moment.
Wow. Mm. There you go. You'll always learn something. Yeah. So tell me about your first song then, Laura. Tom O'Dell, Another Love.
It's one of those ones that makes me happy. Makes me happy for lots of personal reasons as well. Happy times in my life. But when I hear the first few beats of it, I go, oh, yeah, this is nice. I was chatting on the show the other day about frizzing, which is that feeling you get of goosebumps or a familiar feeling when you hear a song. And with that one, I'm like, oh, yes. And there's a bit of a movement with this song, which I've only subsequently seen, where lots of people sing along to the chorus at different gigs. And I'm not surprised it's become a bit of an anthem, because it feels that way. It sort of builds. And for one person, one singer, to have a song that I believe to be quite powerful in the way it makes me feel. Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. I just love it. Mm-hmm. Love it. There isn't really, I mean, it's happy times, but there's no specific, I just love the song, you know? Yes. So that's it, really. And I think he's a great singer. And I love the way it builds. And I've had some really, really happy times in my life in more recent years when I've been listening to it.
I wanna take you somewhere, so you know I care. But it's so cold and I don't know where. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright. I'm just so tired to share my nights. I wanna cry and I wanna love, but all my tears have been used up.
At 20, you get an aneurysm. Mm. That must have been life-changing.
Yeah, it was. It was in my boyfriend's house, got a really bad headache. Didn't know at the time, obviously had no idea. At the time I would have been living your standard 20-year-old teenage sort of life, and went home, was going to go to bed. My mum said, no. She said, you don't seem well. We'll go to the hospital. Went into Loughlin's Town and they thought I had meningitis or something. So it was a couple of days before they realised. They did a CT scan the next day and sort of could see I had blood around my brain. So that was the process. And then it was, you know, being rushed into Beaumont and having brain surgery and all that. Crazy. Like, and for someone that young as well, to be 20, I had booked to go to Australia. I was about to start my travels. I had finished school and I'd realised I wanted to go travelling, and I'd booked to go to Australia, and I was thinking, this can't, like, how is this happening to me, you know? And of course my family were really sort of shocked and by it as well. And yeah, and I think that was the thing. I was being told, you probably have post-operative stress disorder, and realise the severity of what's happened to you, and you might have a stroke during the procedure and all. And none of that happened. And they told me I could fly 6 months, they said, and 6 months to the day I left for Australia, and sort of left it behind like it hadn't happened to me. I was so, a few things. One, realizing how unbelievably lucky you are to still be alive. And that then has led to me having a real, the fact I've no savings is to do with my brain hemorrhage. That's what I tell everyone. I'm broke because of my brain hemorrhage. But no, I am a real seize the day type person. Like, the kids are like, what do you mean we're doing? Like, random stuff. I really feel that you have no idea what is going to happen to you at any given time. And I know that we know that. But I think that happening to me makes me go, I wouldn't really give things a second thought. I'm just like, I'll do it. I'm quite impulsive about my decisions to do stuff and everything. The children think I'm absolutely bonkers, but sure, listen, they'll realise when I'm old. When they listen to me, when they're older, they might know. But yeah, so I think that's probably the main thing, the main effect it's had on me. And my family, I'm very close to my family. Like, anyone that's close to me is like, your family, like, will they ever piss off? Like, my brothers and sisters, there's four of us, we're really close. Like, we weren't when we were growing up, and my parents broke up when I was quite little. My parents were actually the first divorced couple in Ireland. Wow. Yeah, so I was only 15. So that was all very traumatic in many ways. But we fought like cats and dogs when we were little, like many children do, but we are so close now. We've just come back, the four of us, from a trip to Lisbon for my sister's 50th. She's the eldest, Tabitha. And we had we laughed from the minute we arrived in the airport till the minute we got off the plane the other side, non-stop laughter. Like, we just get on great, which is a blessing. Because So I would really have a thing about not going to bed on an argument, making the most of the day. A lot of cliches, but ones I feel are appropriate. I would never, no matter how much of an argument I have with someone, I will never go to bed on an argument, ever.
Tell me something. That's another interesting one. Your parents being the first divorced couple in Ireland. You were 15, you said?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, there was always the issue as well there. I've spoken about the religion. And I was only 15. I was in like an Opus Dei school, a really strict Catholic school. And I remember them calling me out of class to tell me that my dad had called and said, you know, that it had been finalised, that they were divorced and stuff. And it was really, really tough. At the time, I thought it was sort of good because my parents were really strict. Like, my dad, sorry, was really strict. And he wasn't living in the house then anymore. And I was like, woohoo! Sorry, I've been apologising to my mother ever since then, trying to make up to her for how I behaved in those few years. But I was, at the time, dad's headed off now, we're all good, which is terrible, but it's a fact. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, there was but ultimately, we were all devastated. I mean, you think your parents are never going to break up. Mm. And when they do, it's really tricky. I mean, it had been a tumultuous few years. It wasn't like we were all like, God, that's mad now. Sure, we thought they got on great. Do you know what I mean? But still, it was final. It was the end, and it was huge. I mean, we've all, the four of us, we're remarkably stable considering, but we've all our own, issues on the back of it, I suppose. You always do, you know. Yeah.
And I don't want to pry into your private life, but you did mention you're separated. And my kids are 22 and 20. And I always remember my daughter, she's 20, at one point in her class, I think there was only two of them where the parents hadn't separated. She was one of them. There was literally a scene to be that particular class. It was normal. And do you find that? Like, I mean, you separate, how long are you separated?
Yeah, now? I'm separated 5 years. And no, I'd have noticed it. I mean, when I was in school, particularly in my school, I mean, there were a variety of people living together, pretending they liked each other regardless. They were never going to separate. I mean, that was the nature of some of the type of relationships of the parents, the people in my class. I'm sure it's still the same to this day. And that was the sad thing, I suppose. That's what I do find. I find that back then, there really had to be major issues and reasons to separate. You lived with people. Now, some might argue, oh, you worked to your marriage, you don't know. You know, my case, I thought it was really important to go to marriage counselling and everything like that and make sure that we'd made the right decisions in relation to where we were going to go. But I do find that my children would say, oh, Archie's mum lives with, you know, not as much as what you've said, though, but I definitely think it's changed hugely since it would have when I was in school. I was the only person in my year that had parents that were separated and divorced at that, which was, a fairly big deal. Whereas now I definitely find, I mean, my children would be fine. When I told my son that, I said, separating and, that type of thing, he said he just wanted me and my ex-partner to be happy. He's 13, and I just thought that's really, thank God that's the type of viewpoint that they're having. And they were all sort of like that, which is great.
Yeah, I guess that was my point. The fact that unfortunately, I have no idea what the right answer is. The people are separating for whatever reason, and you're not the only child in the class where is that happening. So that kind of support group in my career.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, enough. It seems to be like that, which is great.
Yeah, thank even God. The simple things. I'm going to Johnny's house. Which one? Oh, go to the dad's house. Okay, great. I'll drop you to the dad's
exactly.
house.
Exactly. It's the not a big
house.
Deal. They don't have to explain it to everyone. That's true.
So sorry, I'm just going into this rabbit hole. But I wanted to get to know you better, and I thought, what a better way to do it to record it, you know?
Mm.
And it's fascinating, and I'm genuinely delighted that you've been very open with me, because it makes the conversation all more interesting.
Mm.
So you have a Hans Zimmer. Tell me about the Hans Zimmer song, and what is this tune?
Hans Zimmer, I mean, is amazing. We all, I'm sure, are familiar with lots of his work, and everyone likes different things. For me personally, True Romance, which is the movie, is, if not my top, it's in my top three. I absolutely love that film. I fell in love with it. I did my, I went to do a media diploma for a while in college. I wasn't particularly third educated. I went back years later and did a master's, but at the time I had no interest. I was like, off I go on my travels. But I did go and do a brief media diploma, and I did my thesis on Quentin Tarantino. I love Quentin Tarantino. I love his movies. And he wrote True Romance, but it was directed by Tony Scott. But when I saw that film, I was like, oh my God, I love this film more than life itself. Like, Patricia Arquette and Kristen Slater are amazing in it, right? And the scene, for anyone that hasn't seen it, there's a scene where very near the beginning where they're on a rooftop and they're talking about her past and that, and she gets upset and the music kicks in for this. And I was like, oh my God, what is that music, right? And it lived with me. I was like, this is an amazing, and it's such a simple piece of music. It's literally just piano, like very little going on with it. But they use it throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. And every time, film, sorry, I don't like to say movie. I've tried to stop myself saying movie just because everything's become so American. I'm giving out to the kids. I'm like, stop talking, because they're watching stuff. There's bits through the film and the music comes back in. I'm just like, oh my God, this music. It's amazing. I love it. And actually, when I got married, we had it as our first dance.
Oh, nice.
The music from...
True Romance.
Yeah. But I love that film. I just love it.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites. I absolutely love the dialogue in it. It's spectacular.
Dialogue, yeah. I mean, there's a scene which I particularly concentrated on for one of the bits I was doing in college, with that scene of Christopher Walken.
And Anthony,
in the caravan. It's just... Yep. Anyway, so there. That's that piece of music. I to this day, if I hear it on the back of an ad campaign or anything like that, I'm like, oh... It makes me happy, you know?
I actually bought the screenplay of it because I liked it so much.
Wow.
The screenplay at home. Yeah, it's fabulous. I go back into it every now and then.
Right.
Especially that scene that we won't be able to talk about here, but yeah, that scene
with
the mafia
guy. It's extraordinary.
Guy. Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. Off you go, you travel for a while in Australia and live, seize the day, carpe diem, and you still do it to this day, which I think is a fabulous way to get on with life. And not great if you're a pension broker, you're trying to get business
out
of it.
Yeah, totally. That's the problem, you see. A little bit too much seizing of the day.
But that's okay. But what brought you to the idea of media and media diploma? Well, how did you get into this business? So you've been in the East Coast on and off for 20 years, which is, it's remarkable.
It's
not many people stay in the same. I just saw Declan Meehan going past there. He's been here a little bit longer maybe than you.
Yeah, well, he's been in the business
forever.
Donkeys.
Yeah, he was
over in England for a long time as well. He knows everyone. He's met everyone. He is actually a full-blown legend, that lad. But my dad was in the media.
Okay.
He was, my dad's English. So my mum and dad were both born in England. My mum's parents were Irish. They met over there. And then my mum and all of the family, there was a load of those children. And my dad's grandparent was Irish as well. So they happened to meet in the Irish Catholic Club in Woolwich, my mum and dad. But they're both English. And my dad worked as an editor for a few papers and assistant editor in England, came over, got a job in RTE as, well, first he was a reporter and then he became religious affairs correspondent and then legal affairs correspondent. So he was on the news for many years. But I think the only connection there was that he said to me at one stage they were looking for a voiceover artist to do a voiceover for Guyanese Ladywear in Tullamore when I was like 16, and I went into RTE and did this voiceover, and that was the first ever voiceover I did. And I think when I was growing up and we would go to Mass, if we did drive, we used to call into RTE on the way back quite often for Dad to like file a story or something. And I do think that obviously had sort of sparked my interest. And then I did that voiceover. And then when I came back from Australia, I was like, I wouldn't mind getting some work in radio. I've always loved the idea of radio. I did TV. I went off and did TV for a while and didn't like it half as much. I much prefer radio as a medium. So I came in and I asked about a job, and Joe Harrington, who was the programme controller at the time, took a punt on me and put me on the Saturday show with a guy called Bob Conway, who's been around for many years as well. And I looked like absolutely loved it instantly. And then I went and I was between working here. I've often done other jobs. So I was in 98 driving the Jeeps, and they started getting me to do traffic and a few ads and voiceovers. So the voiceover thing started kicking off then. And that was the beginning of it. And then I did the Saturday show with Bob for a good few years. Then I did the evening Love Songs on the Coast, which I loved. And then I've been doing the breakfast show with Rob for about 17 years. And actually, I'm finding when he's off these couple of weeks, the time tunnel, which is the music feature at the end, I love the music aspect of it. And I missed it because I haven't done it in so long by myself as well, because we do it together. And we're often distracted because we're chatting about other things we wouldn't even really be noticing half the time. But now I'm sitting there with my headphones, listening to the songs, thinking, God, this is lovely. But yeah, alongside that, voiceovers have sort of carried, you know, I've kept the vein of voiceovers has kept going right throughout. I took a little foray into audiobooks for a while, did a few of those, really liked them. But the money in them, it's just not worth the time. When you have three little kids, you need time. And I just didn't have it there. So I did a few kids books, which I really enjoyed. I love children's books. And yeah, so that's it. I'm still here and I love radio. I love it.
In 17 years with the same guy across the road, the way from you.
Yeah.
What's that been like?
Mad. Like, we are literally like a couple in that we reckoned we've spent more time together than we had done with our partners at one stage. We fight. And everyone I meet that listens to our breakfast show says exactly the same thing. So it must be the case. You two are gas, as in you're bickering on air like a married couple. It is like it is. There's no like, I think the problem that a lot of people have with people on Irish radio is this sort of pretense and a certain laughing along to each other. There's none of that. I mean, possibly even too much the other way. We're actually fighting on air. Now, we do get on and we have similar personalities and we bounce quite well off each other, and we're very different, like vastly different. And that makes it sort of work, I think. But yeah, he's literally like a work husband, you know. And that's why I'm like, he's off now, and I wouldn't I would be at pains to tell him I miss him himself, but I've been saying it on the radio, hoping he doesn't get back to him, you know, because he wouldn't be listening. He'll be having a lie in. He won't be getting up that early. And talking of getting up early, I used to not surface from the bed till I was like, till 12 or 1 o'clock ever. When I started doing this show, like, which was before I had kids, people were like, "You're doing a breakfast show? What?" And it is weird that I get up. Like, to this day, there'll be none of this, like, springing out of the bed, having a shower, having a coffee. Like, I've gone to see, over the years, I've spoken to counsellors and I've been in difficult times in my life, and they've gone, okay, you need to, or like my nutrition and diet, bane of my life, you know, healthy eating and trying to get it right and all. And they say, so you get up and you take your time and you have a coffee. No. Snooze, 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 snooze. Quick, shit, 9-11 every morning. I get up because I have to get up. And that's why I sort of like the show, because I think if I wasn't doing it, I wouldn't be getting up early still. I'd get up to bring the kids to school. So I like that it gets me up. And then when I come in, I'm like, drink.
What time do you have to get up?
I get up at, I should get up earlier, but I get up about 5:30. Okay. Certainly enough. Like, and particularly the children, like, with me and them, they often are like, we're not going to bed. And I'm like, 9 o'clock's bedtime during school. It's always close to 10 before they've decided, just one more thing, you know, the usual. And then you're like, oh, God. So it's, you know, I'm tired a lot. But it is early. It's early.
I love radio. I'm delighted with doing this in your studio because there's something. It's a little bit like the church you were talking about earlier on. It's just us. There's no distractions. There's a lovely quietness about it all. But what is fascinating for me as a listener is, to, you know, you'd be listening to Laura and, you know, you might have something you want to say. You know, you're in the car, you're talking to this person that you listen to every morning, you know. And but sometimes, it's, I know you, now there's WhatsApp and you're getting messages, but you mentioned a couple of people, a few people come up to you and say, oh, you're gassed because you're bickering on stage, on the radio. What is the best thing you got from listeners when you bump into people? Because I'm sure you bump into people all the time walking around town. And
that, actually, that they get a laugh out of it. Like, there is so much misery in the world. Like, and like, I'm not suggesting that people go, do you know, we're not going to have a chat about the war in Gaza. But what I do think is that people need to escape that. And that is exactly what our show is. It's bubblegum for the mind. It is, you know. And like, I'm, you know, there was a time I'd be like, oh, you know what? I have a master's in TV and radio broadcasting. And I'm talking about like Fart Appreciation Day or National Bubble Wrap Appreciation Day. What is going on? But ultimately, it's a bit of crack, like, and really and truly, more so than ever before, we need a bit of crack, like, you know, and that's what it is, you know. And the other thing, and this is a smaller thing, but sometimes people send me videos of their children in the back of the car or in the kitchen when they hear their birthday called out on the radio. I swear to God, those videos just, I'm like, stop it. Because they're like about their business, having their breakfast here, and next thing they hear, oh, happy birthday to Lorde. And they're like, oh, and they're just, my name on the radio. And it's a small joy to be able to give people, but it's a joy nonetheless. And I love that. And that nearly keeps me, like Rob sometimes, I go to Rob, we didn't mention that birthday. And he goes, I don't know if we're going to have time. And I'm like, we have to find time. We don't miss a birthday. And he's like, you're so annoying. I'm like, you're annoying. Do you know what I mean? We're like this the whole time. But that's it. I always do birthdays when they come in because I know the joy. Sure. I was on the N11 on the way to a hospital one appointment one time, and I was messaging Rob about the traffic, and he wasn't reading my messages, and I was in a major snot with him. I was like, I was messaging. He was like, I was busy. I said, you can't ignore messages, you know. So anyway, we have this ongoing thing, but I just think radio is a great medium.
It is fantastic, you know? Medium. And I think personally, I think the more we become technology savvy and everything at our fingertips, the more radio is important because of that space it gives us to actually use our imagination, right? You can be talking about bubble wrap day.
Yeah.
And I don't see it. I have no idea what that is. And so my brain is going to go off on a tangent to try to figure it out, which I think is the beautiful part of it, as opposed to Netflix or anything else that you just...
And you get... when I was working in television, I would be so obsessed with getting myself prepared for how I looked on the screen. As a lot of people are. You don't want to be going on with, like... That it really did take... And it took a long time to get comfortable enough with television that I could be anywhere near as myself as I am on radio. Do you know?
What were you working on in television?
My first gig was a programme called Read Right Now, which was an adult literacy show. And I was doing the green screen for that with Derek Mooney. And then I did, I worked for City Channel, which was a Dave Harvey started a station, and I did a makeover show for them called Fashion Forward. And I did a show called City Buzz, which was premieres, go along to the red carpet and interview people on the red carpet, which was great. And then subsequently I worked for the entertainment in TV3. So I did, at the end of every news bulletin at 6 o'clock, there was an entertainment piece.
Okay.
And I did that, which was, again, interviewing people as they come to Ireland, maybe well-known people and celebrities and that. So it was fun. It was really good. But I still yearned. And I was doing radio, the sort of bits and bobs the whole time. I still always loved coming in the state of me and Rob in the mornings. Like, they started putting cameras in studios and they would suggest it here. And I said, Absolutely not. We're not on camera. I'm not having a camera in the studio. Like the state, like honestly, like I sometimes would be in my slippers. I'm always in like gym pants and tracksuit bottoms and stuff. And that's what I like about it. Do you know what I mean? Yes. But as we always say, there's a bang and neglect office in the mornings.
But all throughout this conversation, Laura, and I genuinely, we did have one conversation once before when I met you in the pub before the show or something. And so that's really all I know about you is what you've just been telling me. And what I noticed in this, there's an authenticity about you, which I guess is what you're trying to do on your radio. You know, it's what you do. Am I?
Well, thanks. I mean, I think when it's yourself, you're like, you know, you don't really. I think other people would spot authenticity more than you would yourself. And I don't mean to say I'm all delighted to sing my own praises and whatever I do. But no, that's a really nice thing to say. And thank you, because I think that's what I really like about. I like listening to certain people on the radio for that very reason. Mm. So I suppose it's nice to think that that would be the case, because I think that's really important when it comes to, you know, we used to do prep services and have stuff come in and we'd do stories. But now we had a radio consultant recently and he just said, get rid of all of that. Be yourselves. Yeah. People want to listen to you guys and what you're doing in your lives. They don't want to give a shit about, like, you know, and the top, you know, they don't care about surveys and stuff as much as listening. And we did get rid of it all. And I believe the show, and this is in the last year, I believe the show's a lot stronger. Mm. We talk a bit, as you've probably gathered, I like to chat. So sometimes, and he likes to chat. So between the two of us, we get rapped on the knuckles for not shutting up sometimes. But overall, we got rid of all the jigs, you know, the bits that I suppose we were told, we were taught in old radio, the prep, you know.
Well, that's good, and I'm glad you made an effort to not to worry.
Yeah, no, I did. This is me dressed up, totally.
Laura's wearing a lovely jumper from.
And shoes!
And shoes, and
shoes.
She's fully dressed. It's fantastic. last question about media, then I'm going to ask you about last song and then let you go. So going forward, you're going to stay in radio. It's my guess, right? You don't plan to do anything else just in the near future. If you were to pick a different show or a different type of show, what would that be? If you tomorrow East Coast show came to you and say, Laura,
you can do anything you like.
Anything you want.
For any money you like.
For any money you like. What would you do?
Do you know what? Two types of show. One, we spoke about this. And just to throw a compliment back your way, I think I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. I went to a live show of yours. And what I particularly liked is you have an incredibly good ability, a bit like Louis Theroux, who I love, of just listening to people. And that is possibly the skill that many of us don't have. And I know I did Declan's show for a while and I had to literally keep my mic down and nearly keep my hand on the mic to stop me putting it up. So that's no mean feat. It's really tricky to do that. But I'm very, very interested in other people and their stories, to the point that people are like, why are you asking? People give out to me for asking people questions, but I'm intrigued by people's occupations. Like I have a friend, I know a guy who works the docks, and I literally, he was like, why are you asking a question? And I was like, to him, he works in the docks in Dublin, and he said he took in a lot of the deliveries. This was ages ago now, but I said to him, I just find it. And would you not be exhausted? Like, so you're loading off the ships and you're taking the stuff off and you're passing it on. And he went, it's not the Titanic. Like, we have machines. You absolute dope. But I was asking him all these questions. He's like, you're always asking me questions about the jobs. I think I'd like to do something. Well, I've come up with a slot in the show before, but it didn't really pan out. But a show where you talk to people, not famous people, about their music. Like you're asking me, I just find stories behind people's songs. When we do music features on the show, they're fascinating, asking people why they like certain songs, but also their lives, as in their jobs. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know more about being a bin man. Like, how, why, when, what? Where did my bin go last week? How did you not notice it going in the back? Mm-hmm. Like, you know. So I think I'd probably do something like that. Nice. To do with interviewing people from, like, similar to what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, even occupations and that type of thing. I just find it really interesting, do you know?
That'd be lovely, yeah. That'd be great, and I'm sure you will get it done enough.
We're listening. Or someone else, doesn't have to be East Coast, but Anna. It's funny because people have always said to me, lots of people have worked in East Coast over the years, and some people go, would you not, go on to, and I'm like, do you know, there was a time that I had huge amounts of drive and I was doing this and that and the other, and then the kids came along and I didn't lose my drive, but I'm in here in the mornings and I spend the afternoons with them. And that's, I've never been able to spend the mornings with them much, which has always been a little bit of a bone of contention and makes me a bit sad. But I have the afternoons. If I was doing another radio show, my shift, you know, I'd be in town all day, whatever. So actually, and I love the local aspect of it. I really do like working here, and I like the fact that I'm down the road from my house and down the road from my kids.
Lovely. So your last piece of music is The Beatles. Tell me about this song. Which one?
Apart from the Latin Mass tunes growing up, my family were very musical and my dad played the piano a lot and the guitar, and he didn't, you know the way when people, I've always been jealous of people say, yeah, I grew up with like Zeppelin and all that. Didn't happen in our house. We didn't grow up with anything cool like that. We grew up with the piano, the guitar, religious songs predominantly. Like, I'd be lucky getting on my mum's shoulders for Onward Christian Soldiers or something like that, you know what I mean? But we did grow up with a lot of piano and a lot of traditional songs and beautiful songs, because my granny, Mothy, she was called, was a beautiful pianist. And so there was a lot of piano growing up. So we all are into music, the four of us. I was drafted off to violin lessons when I was younger, the back of my mum's moped for many years. Didn't keep that up, unfortunately. I can just about manage Silent Night. Twinkle Twinkle, not even Silent Night. But Beatles, we used to go every summer. We'd get on in the car, four of us and mum and dad, and we'd drive to London on the boat and from Wales on every summer. And we'd be there for the summer. We used to go, we'd stay between our two granny's house and see all our cousins. And on that trip, there was a significant amount of Beatles. Always. It seemed to be like that was, it was just the Beatles and some sing songs. But so they were ingrained in me growing up, and I've always loved them. I love loads of them. My problem was picking which one. And I thought back to one of the last times before my dad got a thing called PSP, which affected his mobility and stuff and his ability to play the guitar and everything. But before he lost his mobility, we had a sing-song in his house, and he was playing the Beatles, as he always did. And one of the ones that I remember thinking, God, this song makes me really, really happy, was that one, was Here, There and Everywhere. I love loads of them at different times, but yeah. And I just thought, no, I'm going to go for that one. And I played a bit of it in here just because I was trying to remind myself which ones I loved best. And I was like, yeah, definitely Here, There and Everywhere.
Wonderful. And we're going to leave it at that. Laura Wood, thanks a million for your time.
No really problem. Thank you for asking me to do it. I was very flattered.
To lead a better life, I need my love to be here. Here, making each day of the